Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Aging Show, and we are talking with Sister Mary Jean Tay, parish nurse with St. Vincent's Medical Center. One of the things that I mentioned at the break is, can we talk about the scope of areas of parish nursing? Because there's obviously, there's the medical, there's the health related, there are the mental, there's psychological issues that so many people are dealing with, as well as the social issues. And I know that there are trained nurses, but not necessarily psych nurses, they're not necessarily social workers, but because they're a resource, because they're a point person, and they know where the places are to refer. Does this cover that, maybe plus more?
Well, just the whole role of the parish nurse. Parish nurse is an educator, and she can give health talks herself in the parish or bring in other people that could do the same thing. She's a referral person, as we've mentioned. She's a counselor. She may just be able to listen, and by listening to the people, help them solve their own problems. The nurse also knows her limits. If she feels that the person has a particular situation that needs much more professional help than she's able to give, then she will refer that person out to the proper type of counseling service or whatever. Sometimes the people just need to talk to their pastor on a spiritual level, but other times it's much more involved and they need psychiatric or psychological counseling.
Right. Well,
it would be rare, but that happens.
Well, just talking is therapy in itself, and how many people are,
yeah,
or listening, but how often do people just walk away saying, gosh, I feel so much better getting that off my chest, or just being able to say the words?
Just being able to listen or to know that the nurse is available to them is a big help. But in general, in the scope of our program right now, it's doing the immediate, as I say, I still never defend the blood pressure screenings, because it has, we've had people go from church to emergency room to surgery. Not often, but it has mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. And we have had pastors tell us that a parishioner will come up and say to him, that nurse saved my life. I never knew I had a blood pressure problem, or I never knew that I had diabetes and I was feeling different, and the nurse got me to go to the doctor. So the nurses have done, on a very, very basic level, some very, very good things, and it works. But they are available also for helping the people get the services they need. Some might be, as when you're involved in Comfort Keepers, getting people, you know, into a system where they can stay in their own home. And so the nurse can help to facilitate that for them. They're just there to help out in any way they can.
Can there be more than one nurse with the church?
Oh, sure. What we tried to say in the congregations, I have one nurse as a contact person, and she's the one that arranges the schedules for the other nurses, some of whom just may be able to give an hour or two after Sunday Mass to do the blood pressures and nothing else. But she arranges schedules. And some of the churches that have a larger number of members of the congregation and nurses, they'll have their own monthly meetings and plan their own activities on an individual level. We do have monthly meetings for all of our nurses. I was sort of naive to think that everybody was going to come every month to every meeting, but I always preach that family comes first, so I have to realize that they have other commitments. But we do have monthly meetings, and we have professional speakers come in, either a member of the medical profession or from professional organizations or groups in the community, so that the nurses can keep updated about what's new, what's going on, and what's available to tell the members of their congregation.
That's half the battle, is mm-hmm. being able to mm-hmm. point people in the right direction and give them an alternative, give them some hope that there's something out there that can help them.
And you live those conversations. You and I on the phone keep exchanging. I keep writing as much down as I'm asking whenever we've spoken mm-hmm. as well.
Well, you know, one of the things, this isn't the type of volunteer or job that people leave at the office. These nurses, I'm sure, take this home and they live with the people that they are trying to help, and they worry. They probably spend more time in their personal life dealing with these issues than they ever thought that they would, because they're caring individuals and they can't just leave it at the door.
And I think that's true. They, you know, they do. Some of them have found that the same parishioners will come to them in their line for blood pressures. And so they form this relationship with the people, and they get to know their needs, their family's needs. And then they also have a way to find out how things are going. And it just works. It's a very simple, basically simple program that has a caring person out in the congregation who is available to the members of the congregation to keep them healthy.
And it becomes kind of viral, too, because once somebody sees the benefit of the association with the parish nurse. They tell someone else, and they tell someone else. And if it's a system that works, then that parish nurse becomes very integral to the congregation.
So really, your typical nurse is a nurse.
A nurse is a nurse.
Is a nurse.
If you're a nurse, you have your whole family looking for information or advice or help. And the same thing can happen in the congregation.
What I marvel is that the amount of work that goes into their career job, if you will, as nursing, and they're still giving to the community mm-hmm. in their own personal time, which I just think is a wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
Well, I've had nurses tell me when they first started in the program, you know, I always wanted to do something in my church, but I couldn't sing in the choir, and I didn't want to teach religious ed, but I can be a nurse. So this fulfills their desire to do something in their church, and it's a very, very efficacious way to practice your profession and give to your church at the same time.
Now, how has the program changed over the years since the beginning when you first started and launched this yourself, which deserves applause as well?
Well, it's grown. It has grown, but what I have found, too, is some of the original parishes that we started out in the early 90s, we still have some of the same nurses. They're still very eagerly doing their same work. But it's sort of hard sometimes to recruit new nurses, and I don't know if it's because younger people are busier nowadays, but we are always open to having more nurses come into programs, regardless of how many are already in the church. We'd like to have more nurses, and we'd like to have more churches.
But, you know, this raises another point, because you're saying as far as you can't sing in the choir, but what if you don't have the nursing credentials, but you would like to participate in some way? Do you have other avenues for individuals that they can volunteer their time within the structure?
Well, within the structure, specifically as the parish nurse program, not necessarily, but they could be helpers. If there were a health fair going on, they could come in and help to coordinate some of that, to help set up, to do some other things. Plus also some of the churches have programs of home visitors, and I tell the nurses, sometimes in nursing we tend to take over other things, but if there are people who are able to do the home visiting, some churches drive the members of the congregation to services or to doctor's offices, but we can sort of keep in contact with those people or try to tell them or ask them to let us know if they notice a change and sort of have a relay type of mm-hmm. Exchange of information about what needs to be done. My hope also is to say if a patient discharged from the hospital with home care services, once those services are no longer indicated, that the home care agency would say, does your congregation have a parish nurse? I can call the parish nurse and see if she can at least call you, see how you're doing. She can't come in and do the same things like the wound care or the injections, but because she's a member of your congregation, she could keep in touch with you that way.
You know what I'm thinking about this too? Your career has traveled from your initial taking of your vows all the way through pharmacy school and psychology and nursing degree. A lot of people are changing their careers now or adding to what they already know. So this might be a good opportunity to shadow a parish nurse and be inspired to go on for some additional training.
There are some college programs that are offering a master's in parish nursing now, believe it or not.
Really?
And we have
also
had some nurses who are getting their master's degree up at Yale and other places, doing their thesis on parish nurse program, the origins in Connecticut, it's growing. There's a nice undercurrent of people becoming more familiar with parish nursing, and eventually, I think that this type of a professional aspect of nursing will be much more known and growing.
Right. Now, to give some perspective to the size of the parish nurse contingent. Now, your area of coverage is from Greenwich to Bridgeport?
Stratford to Stamford.
Stratford to Stamford.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, and you have 70 congregations that have parish nurses.
That's right.
Within the state of Connecticut, do you have any idea how many, approximately?
How many parish nurses altogether?
Yeah.
I would say we have close to 1,000 altogether.
Wow.
We have about 250 on our mailing list. Some are more active than others. And as I mentioned, there are 6 hospitals altogether.
Right, you mentioned that.
And then there's a freestanding group up in the Hartford area, because there's no hospital up there who has a parish nurse program. There are groups of nurses who do their own parish nursing in their own congregations.
Now, you could probably extrapolate those 1,000 in the state of Connecticut across the United States and easily mm-hmm. say that there's 50,000 parish nurses.
I would say, has grown. It has really grown.
Wow, I had no idea. Now, there is an association of parish nurses.
There is the International Parish Nurse Resource Center, which is stationed out in St. Louis. It's run by Deaconess Health System, and that's sort of our national, well, it says international because we do have programs in Canada, in England, Australia, and a few other parts of the world.
So if a congregation were interested in investigating the the whole concept of parish nursing, is there a primer, if you will, that, that the association has on, say, a website?
Oh, there's a plethora of information on the website. Just by going to the internet, or just by going www.parishnursing.com, it'll get introduced to a lot of information about parish nursing, or the International Parish Nurse Resource Center, just putting that in. And then, of course, locally here in Connecticut, we each have our own program. And as I mentioned, we don't compete. We're collaborative. And we have in Connecticut what we call the Connecticut Council of Parish Nurse Coordinators, CCPNC. And we meet monthly. We plan a statewide symposium every year in April.
Mm-hmm.
We have good attendance at that. We try to bring in speakers that are, you know, animators and different fields, and it's been very successful.
How can the community support you? Because obviously there's always some need in here. You're as cost-effective as you can make yourself at this point.
Because the nurses are all volunteers, right? And the parents, right?
Exactly.
Well, overhead.
I think what we'd like to do is just say, ask your pastor why we don't have a parish nurse program
exactly.
in our congregation. Because it really is a nice program. You've mentioned my past, you know, history of different experiences, and I always tell the nurses one of the nicest. I've had a lot of nice jobs as a sister, but this is one of the nicest. I work with just the best group of nurses. They're always, because they're in there volunteering, they're doing what they want to do. It's actually very easy in regard to, like, the paperwork that's involved in home care and hospitals and everything is quite different from this volunteer type of work. We're a professional organization. We do basic type of paperwork, but it's simple. We don't concentrate on that. We concentrate on working with the patient. I shouldn't call them patients, because people in the parishes are not patients. We try to prevent them from being patients by getting them before they're sick.
Well, we're going to put on our website the references to theparishnurse.com and other parish nurse information, and just you can go to our list of categories and just click on parish nurse or type in parish nurse and it'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I've always been a proponent of since we got into the home care business was advocacy,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that there are so many people that have no one to champion their cause, have no medical knowledge, and they are basically subject to the will or whims of the medical community, and they are subjected to all kinds of tests and procedures that they have no clue about whether to have, when to have, what alternatives are there. And unfortunately, there's no program under Medicare that I'm aware of that supports advocacy that is totally independent of anything and is just patient-based. But is that not another realm of what you're doing?
Oh, sure, Dennis, that is. I mean, a parish nurse can be an advocate. As a group, our statewide group has taken a few stands in regard to health issues, but also the individual parish nurse for the member of her congregation, of her faith community, can help to be an advocate. And this all is a function of how much time the parish nurse has available to be available to her congregation.
So to answer your question, Dawn, if there were multiple parish nurses in a large congregation, probably it's necessary because she or he is only one person.
It's a ratio, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost a quota that mm-hmm. would be required. Now, you're mm-hmm. available for public speaking as well during the course of your...
I have done that, yes.
Uh-huh. And radio shows.
Well, now she's a radio show personality.
And as far as fundraising is concerned, anything that happens during the year?
Well, the symposium in April isn't a big fundraiser. We just really try to cover costs. Just good attendance of that helps us to keep a little base
right.
of funds for projects, which are all related to our program. There are some programs where the nurses in the particular program are certified to do CPR, and they do that in the name of their church, and then the fee that they get from that goes into their parish nurse program in their individual church. They can buy supplies for their own program because the churches don't have a budget for the parish nurse program.
Okay, because you just had a very nice article in the Connecticut Post about the program as well.
We should put that on the website as well.
Yes.
So I didn't see that. Is the phone number that we have, 203-576-5716, a good reach
that's
number for you?
That's my office.
Okay, that's mm-hmm. Sister Mary Jean's phone number.
Yes.
She really does.
or Marilyn Faber will answer the phone there.
The other way to reach her is MTAG.
TAGUE
T-A-G-U-E at stvincents.org.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on
because this is something that people need to know about or they need to know more about.
And
we want it to grow.
We'll help you grow. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much, too.
There was an article in the middle of November that was reporting that Darvon was being pulled by the FDA from the market. Now, apparently this was a painkiller that had been on the market for 53 years, but 32 years of that
has been
a contentious dispute among different proponents and opponents of that drug and the FDA. And the name of the class of drug that this is propoxifen, and it is removed or has been ordered to be removed by the FDA because of serious heart attack risks. FDA has recommended that doctors switch their patients to other painkillers, notably extra strength Tylenol or acetaminophen. And
it's a very narrow margin of safety between the recommended dose of this and a harmful dose or a fatal overdose, according to the FDA.
Well, I've heard of this, but I didn't realize it's an opiate with addictive qualities. And it was the 38th most prescribed generic drug in 2009. But Britain banned this in 2005, and the European Union followed in 2009. Which was really telling was that the reason for pulling this drug was the unusual number of deaths involving Darvocet and propoxifen derivatives in Florida, where medical examiners do more toxicology work.
But I'm surprised that 32 years, this drug has been very, very common.
Well, apparently the last 6 years have been the most contentious.
Wow. In January 2009, an FDA advisory committee voted 14-12 to remove it from the market.
FDA
had been petitioned to ban the drug in 1978.
And again in 2006 by a group called the Health Research Group of Public Citizen. And Dr. Sidney Wolf, who was the group's leader, said, "I would have praised them if they had done this 6 years ago, but it's hard to praise them when there have been 120 million more prescriptions filled since 2005 and conservatively 1,000 to 2,000 more deaths. Quote, it's inexcusable."
Now, one of the studies the FDA released Friday showed potentially dangerous heart electrical changes in healthy people taking the drug. This is amazing.
Well, you have to wonder.
And I think there's, you know, with any drug, there's certain risks that may go along with the drug, but this is clearly, as this is saying, according to Dr. John K. Jenkins, director of the Office of New Drugs for the FDA, in this case, the benefits no longer outweigh its serious heart risks.
Again, Dr. Wolf said that the FDA had allowed a series of dangerous products to remain on the market long after they were proved unsafe, most recently the diabetes drug Avandia. Of the new studies behind Friday's announcement, he said they purposely waited until they had not only a smoking gun, but an exploding gun. So clearly, Darvocet, Darvon, and other like drugs are no longer on the market.
We'll be back.